Welcome to Streaming Into the Void, where we discuss all the streaming news for the week ending April 26th, 2024. I'm Kim Hollis, the greatest draft pick ever to come from Illinois State. With me are Jim Bridie, content creator and gamer, podcasting in a neck brace after a dastardly attack by the elite.
Just keeping kayfabe alive.
Also, David Mumpower, author of Behind the Ride and streaming media analyst, who is missing day three of the NFL draft for this.
You can't miss day three, David. That's when all the good punters get picked.
No joke. A good punter did get picked.
No joke. No punter should ever get picked in the draft.
And the podcast is produced and edited by Raul Buriel, turned into a couch potato.
I have four NHL Stanley Cup games playing back-to-back today. I'm not moving from my seat.
This week, the ratings are the news.
Wait, what?
But before we get into it, we're deep into earnings season. Cable providers Comcast and Charter continue to shed customers, but Comcast had some good news on the Peacock front.
It's disappointing that a company losing hundreds of thousands of customers every quarter barely makes waves anymore. Charter lost nearly 400,000 customers last quarter. Comcast lost 487,000 customers in the same quarter. To complicate matters for Comcast, they also lost 65,000 broadband customers. And yet, Comcast beat estimates because it's somewhat insulated from cord cutting by the fact that they own NBC Universal and its movie and TV studios, theme parks, cable channels, network TV, and streaming service Peacock. Peacock continues to be a money loser, but it's trending in the right direction, adding 3 million paid subscribers in this last quarter. David, where did those Peacock subscribers come from?
Okay, we're to the point of the podcast where I praise Peacock. I'll give you all a moment to express your surprise. Peacock spent $110 million on a single NFL playoff game. And the idea here was, we're already losing so much money. What's another $110 million to throw on the pile? That sounds ridiculous, but I honestly think that was part of the calculus here. And this one worked. And we know because Bob Iger is always saying, folks, live sports is everything. And Bob Iger is not talking randomly here. He has the data to support it. And we are now seeing the data coming out from a different source, which is that those 3 million subscribers that Raul is referencing, that is the people like Kim and I who had let Peacock go. And then once they had a playoff game, we said, screw it. $30 for a year of Peacock isn't bad. So we went ahead and subscribed again. And the signs are that those subscribers have stayed. Now, if we actually track all of the number of times that Peacock has listed its growth, it's not actually the correct math. So there's some stuff happening here behind the scenes, but I don't want to get lost in the details here. What I want to do instead is praise the fact that this was legitimate, sustained growth by a streaming service. And because of that, their revenue was up. Now, year over year, their losses weren't down significantly. It wasn't as much as their revenue was up, which shows you that Peacock is still the oddity of its structure is that the more subscribers it has, the more money it can potentially lose. But these are better subscribers than the ones they've had in the past. They appear to be watching Oppenheimer. They appear to be watching the shows we've been tracking in Tim's ratings analysis. These folks are staying and they're developing a loyalty to Peacock, which means they're getting entrenched. And so churn isn't the factor it has been in the past. That $110 million by Peacock was money well spent.
Ted, they're watching Ted. Evidently, Ted was one of the most watched shows on Peacock ever.
Yeah, and the other thing about this is we're starting to see a trend here with live sports, and I think that we'll go into that just a bit right now, which is Andrew Marchand has reported the fact that the instant the exclusive negotiating window ended for Warner Brothers Discovery and ESPN, Amazon jumped into the bidding, and apparently Amazon is about to get part of the NBA licensing rights pie. It is going to be a primary streaming service for the NBA moving forward, which means people are going to need to subscribe to Amazon Prime to have Amazon Prime Video to watch the NBA, and it could even include conference finals over the next 10 years. We don't know exact details yet, but it appears that Comcast may be emboldened, based on what happened with the Super Bowl, to go ahead and jump in for the rights here. Now, ESPN and ABC have apparently kept their rights, but Warner Brothers Discovery hasn't kept theirs yet, which means that right now we know who two of the three broadcasters are going to be for the next round of NBA rights. That's going to be Amazon and Disney. There's a third piece of the puzzle, Warner Brothers Discovery let this go out of the exclusive bidding window because they have the right to match. They want to see what happens next. Well, what might happen next is Comcast creates a deal that is so expensive that they know that Warner Brothers Discovery can't afford it. Now, we're speculating here. We don't know that for sure. But this is the type of strategy we're watching unfold now, which is streaming and linear networks are going to work in cohesion, as we're seeing with ESPN and ABC, and then the upcoming ESPN over-the-top streaming service. And the idea is Max could offer NBA games or Peacock could offer NBA games. We don't know which one of those is going to win, but that's how it's trending right now.
Well, let's be honest with ourselves. When was the last time we actually uttered the words, well, that worked out well for Warner Brothers Discovery? It sure looks like right now Comcast has realized that their future is going to be in streaming, and for all the money that Peacock has been losing, it is going to eventually become their profitable future. You have to spend money to make money. We've talked about this with Paramount Plus as well. Streaming services are money losers to begin with. Eventually, they will become profitable, and that is where Peacock is going. And there are upsides for the cable companies. The cable companies are trying to fight cord cutting, and arguably, I'd say the government is helping. A recent regulation from the FCC is forcing cable companies to publish these so-called nutrition labels for their services with clear pricing and no hidden fees. This is prompting Comcast to launch their new Now, N-O-W, services, which they've positioned against mobile companies that are selling broadband to the home. If streaming is going to replace cable, you still need internet access, and the old pricing models aren't going to fly with younger consumers. Clear, simple pricing may draw customers back to the cable companies. I've run the numbers, and I could get Comcast Now internet service and then add to that something like Hulu Plus Live or YouTube TV and save upwards of $60 a month over what I'm paying to Comcast right now for internet and television. Comcast at least looks to be having a potentially rosy future. A company like Charter, though, that is basically only broadband and cable television, they're in a much tougher spot. I don't know what's going to happen to companies like Charter or Cox in the long term, but you could expect that Comcast is going to be leaning heavily into their NBC Universal and chiefly into their streaming services. And that's where buying into the next NBA contract, which is going to be for 10 years, makes a lot of sense for them. And that's really what's going to leave Warner Brothers Discovery in a lurch, because they've just, as David, you've pointed out, renewed contracts with all of their NBA broadcasting team, and those people might not have any jobs in the near future.
Yeah, a lot depends on what Comcast wants to do here. Are they willing to do another money loser like Peacock has been? Or do they just decide, you know what, we haven't been doing the NBA, we don't need the NBA? And if I were guessing right now, that is what I suspect will happen. And again, Warner Brothers does have the ability to match anything. So it would need to be a poison pill contract anyway, or they would just need to say to Warner Brothers Discovery, we don't think you have the money, which, you know, isn't the worst dare in the world. But to a larger point, everything we're discussing here is a way to provide everyone with a soft landing moving forward. And so it is going to allow some of these cable vendors to kick the can down the road and gradually reduce their revenue over time, rather than having that sudden, oh, where'd everybody go? And the other thing we're tracking, and even though this is a streaming podcast, we still have to track it. And that is, a lot of people think we're reaching a point where we've bottomed on cable subscriptions, which means all the people who are going to cut cable have done it. It's what I call the AOL line, because past a certain point, AOL kept having millions of subscribers from people who were just going to have it until the day they died. Cable is probably only a couple of years away from that point.
YouTube, meanwhile, reported strong earnings.
Yeah, YouTube's subscriber revenue is difficult to gauge as parent company Alphabet folds all its subscriber revenue from both Google and YouTube together. But YouTube's ad revenue for Q1 of 2024 was up 21% to $8 billion. And that's just on ads alone. Those of you who remember our Netflix conversation from last week will remember that Netflix earned roughly $9 billion in the same quarter from both ads and subscriber fees. So YouTube and Netflix are pretty much neck and neck in terms of revenue as the two top dogs here. It's hard to say just what the cost of operating YouTube is, because Alphabet won't tell us, but $8 billion in a quarter just from ads, that's a staggering amount of money.
And it's really good news overall, because we'd all been worried about YouTube.
Even Roku reported good news.
Yeah, the good news here is that their earnings weren't as bad as forecast. Wall Street forecast that Roku would lose 61 cents per share, and they only lost 35 cents per share. That is, in fact, very impressive relative to forecast. But Roku's going to be swimming upstream for the rest of the year. While they did add 1.6 million active subscribers in the quarter, Vizio has been bought by Walmart, and given the short shelf life of these Roku TVs, we can expect that within a couple of years, when a consumer is out looking for their next cheap but massive TV at Walmart, they'll likely be buying something that's not running on the Roku platform.
Yeah, and we should also go ahead and circle back to back in February when the Vizio report came out, Roku stock dropped. And I'm not saying it was, you know, at the levels of Fubo TV after the announcement of the sports deal, but it wasn't good. And it is going to be a lingering effect. And it does seem like Roku needs to go to Walmart hat in hand and say, baby, 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 we can work this out, because they need it.
Am I still wishing I had bought Roku at, what was it, $26 a share?
It depends on the day, Tim. It always depends on the day.
But as we promised, there's rating news as well. A viral Beavis and Butthead skit has made Ryan Gosling's recent episode of Saturday Night Live the most watched episode of the sketch comedy show on Peacock ever.
Seven viewers!
And Disney Plus is reporting that Bluey's recent special episode hit record ratings. But none of that matters nearly as much as the news this week Nielsen was expanding their capability. What does that mean for streaming ratings?
They messed up.
I can't call Nielsen liars, but suddenly this week, their ratings are listing several shows that never made the charts before. And the absence of some of these shows on the ratings had been a frequent topic of conversation on our podcast. I'll leave it to Tim to list the titles later, but to imply that these shows are making the ratings now because of improved capability by Nielsen is laughable on its face. As we've discussed before, Nielsen measures viewership based on their device's ability to listen to what you're watching and then tally the ratings based on the shows it matches to a database. What seems to have happened here is that Nielsen's database was either incomplete or had some bugs where certain shows weren't being counted. So let's not even quibble about how Nielsen ratings don't even count mobile viewing on phones and tablets. Heck, they're not even reliable enough to measure the devices they're supposed to be counting.
You had one job, Nielsen.
This was a story that came out on Thursday afternoon, and I was the first one to see it. When I posted the link in our Discord, I could just picture the look that Raul, Kim, and especially Tim were going to have. And I almost didn't want to tell them because I knew it was that bad. Egregious isn't a strong enough word for this. Look, folks, every time we talk about Nielsen, we go, hey, look, it's probably missing this and this. We're aware of the gaps in the system. It's not a surprise from that perspective, but how casually they just went, oh, hey, you know all those shows with hundreds of episodes? Yeah, people were watching those. Go figure. It's maddening.
The fact that they couldn't even bother to ask themselves why it is that a show that evidently is getting a lot of viewership wasn't showing up in their own charts. There's no critical thought to what they were doing. They were just running the numbers and said, well, these are the numbers. This must be the truth. Evidently not.
Folks, you can go back to early episodes of this podcast. We were talking about Nielsen ratings, and it was just one prolonged discussion of, wow, where is so-and-so? Because we knew, and Bluey was definitely one of the big ones. Even now, they're not getting The Simpsons right. They can't admit it, but they're not getting The Simpsons right, and that's after this fix. They're doing the best that they can with emerging technology, and I totally get that, but we're taking a lot on faith whenever we do Nielsen ratings, and this week, our faith was abused in a cruel way.
So, Tim, do you want to talk about the ratings?
Okay, I guess.
We trust them completely.
Yes, absolutely. 100% accurate or your money back. Nielsen streaming ratings for Monday, March 25th to Sunday, March 31st, 2024.
Patreon subscribers, we will not be refunding your money. Sorry.
We're going to start this week with the probably most normal of the charts, but also the probably the dullest. That's the originals. Three Body Problem is, of course, the top show again. 1.7 billion minutes for 8 episodes, the first full week of its release after premiering on the 21st. Not a surprise here. Probably going to stick around for a little bit as people just try to figure out what the hell is going on.
So, yeah, we talked about last week what we should expect from the second week. And so now we're at 3 billion minutes after, you know, 10 or 11 days. Tim, we're kind of in the same spot we were last week where we think that's pretty good, but it hasn't been renewed yet a month later, so we still don't know if Netflix is happy. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very weird. Of course, they have a month more data than what we have. And actually, there's really no consistency with Netflix's determination as to whether to renew a show. Sometimes they'll renew it immediately. Sometimes they'll wait. I don't know how this didn't get renewed. It hasn't been renewed yet.
Sandman's a really good example of this where we weren't sure what was happening, and it turned out there were contract negotiations happening behind the scenes. And there are some pretty expensive people who make the show. And so that could be what's happening, where they're all agreeing to take modest pay cuts in exchange for getting guaranteed to finish telling the story. Or it could just be that even though these are very good numbers, the show is too expensive to justify what it's doing.
That's what I'm leaning towards, is I imagine this one was not cheap to produce. So that's the holdup for Netflix. And it just depends what their computer spits out as to whether or not they should keep it around. I assume eventually we'll get another one, because this is too good a performance for them not to, but they may be just hemming and hawing on it for money reasons.
It's kind of a prestige show too, and that should matter to them. I'm not saying it does, but it should. But everything about this has led to some bad journalism. And Tim, you're going to lead right into that with the second one, aren't you?
Yeah. Second is Testament, the story of Moses. A billion minutes viewed for the 3-episode docuseries that premiered on the 27th.
Yeah, so there was much haranguing of the Three Body Problem for the fact that it didn't actually win its first Sunday, which was Easter Sunday, and the thing that won was a Moses story. Go figure, folks.
Yes, the Sunday here is Easter. So yeah, here's a bunch of stuff that's been around for a week or more or so, so we can get to the more interesting things. Homicide New York is third, 680 million minutes. Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman, fourth, 639 million minutes. Shogun is the only non-Netflix show on the original chart this week. 422 million minutes for 6 episodes, 4 more to go. The finale actually arrived this week, so it'll hang around for another month. Back in six, Gabby's Dollhouse returns, 419 million minutes for 64 total episodes. The ninth season, season 9, arrived on March 25th. All right. So Physical 100, we talked about this last week. Physical 100 Underground, I should say, takes seventh with 401 million minutes for now, listing 9 episodes, which, by the way, yeah, they have this wrong again. They said 7 last week and it was only 4. They said 9 this week, but it's up to 7. Episodes 5, 6, and 7 arrived on the 26th. The 8th and 9th episodes, the finale, arrived on April 2nd, meaning that'll be reflected in next week's ratings. One job. Buying Beverly Hills is a 393 million minutes for 18 episodes. The second season of this dropped March 22nd. So this is the whole week's worth of ratings, so we probably won't see it again. Love is Blind is here for one more week in 9th, 360 million minutes. While returning in 10th is It Cake, 346 million minutes for 16 episodes. But the show has 3 seasons, and because of how Nielsen tracks this stuff, and we saw this with the second season, if a show has a different title for a subsequent season, Nielsen counts it as a separate show. Just like Physical 100 Underground is only counted as one season, even though it's actually the second. Hey, remember what they call the second season of Is It Cake?
Is It Cake 2?
Yes, T-O-O. And that was counted differently as a separate show from the first season. The third season changes the E in Cake to a 3, but that's apparently close enough for Nielsen, so they've probably lumped those two together, which after it arrived on the 29th, so it's just the weekend. So we might see that one again next week. But yeah, this is the limitations of their system, or they're just too lazy just to combine all the numbers.
I have concerns about the people who handle their databases. I really do.
All right, so that's the originals chart. Movies is still topped by Roadhouse, 812 million minutes for its first full week on Amazon Prime, which is quite good, actually. But then things get really, really dumb. Second is The Accountant from Netflix, 679 million minutes. Yes, the 2016 thriller starring Ben Affleck, which is here because it came back to Netflix on March 27th.
And it's also the unofficial movie of AEW Dynamite, because it was always playing either before or after AEW Dynamite.
Sure was. We know that painting so well.
Wait, it gets dumber. Third goes to something called Mending the Line, a 2022 drama starring Brian Cox that arrived on Netflix on March 23rd, 353 million minutes viewed. I would like to jump to fifth and mention that this spot goes to a 2022 movie called On the Line, which is very unrelated to Mending the Line, with 331 million minutes viewed. This arrived on Netflix on March 22nd. This one is a thriller starring Mel Gibson, and I refuse to say anything anymore about it other than it sort of, but not quite, reminded me of a game I played last year called Killer Frequency, which only that was a goofy puzzle game, and this is a bad thriller starring Mel Gibson with a terrible twist ending that I read when I discovered what this movie was. Fourth, by the way, is still the Super Mario Brothers movie, 338 million minutes. At least that makes sense. And Moana's in sixth, Disney Plus, 322 million minutes. And Max's Wonka is still here, 358 million minutes. At least we have a new release taking eighth with The Wages of Fear, 246 million minutes for this French remake of 1953 movie, which we definitely talked about this one on What's New. So at least it's a new movie. I'll take that. Previous top movie, Damsel, drops to ninth, 239 million minutes. And Movies wraps up with Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, hanging on to 10th, 234 million minutes.
So realistically, this was a really bad week for movies with only two titles earning more than 353 million minutes watched, presuming we trust Nielsen.
Yeah, it was a bad week for everybody that's not Netflix, more so than usual. All right, turning to Acquired, our top show is something we've never seen before, and that is The Resident, 1.4 billion minutes for 103 episodes credited to Hulu and Netflix. This show arrived on Netflix, all six seasons of it, on March 4th. Why we're just seeing it now, I don't know, and that's probably something they were miscalculating.
Yeah, here's a show, of course, that we've never seen before, and the fact that Nielsen probably has not been counting it accurately all along has negatively impacted the success of the show. Look at something like Suits that became like a viral sensation and probably fed upon itself for the period that it was at the top of the ratings. The Resident should probably have had that much success even before it landed on Netflix at the start of March, but because of how Nielsen is demonstrating their inability to accurately count things, a show like The Resident, which I believe no longer airs new episodes.
Correct.
Could have been doing a lot better. It may even have been renewed if Nielsen had only done their job properly.
Yeah, but this aired on Fox, so therefore it was on Hulu.
Right, and then it's also on Netflix. But just to a larger point, the fact that it's got 1.5 billion viewer minutes and we'd never seen it before just shows how they were completely missing it, because you don't suddenly go from zero to 1.5 billion unless something is happening. This was just a staggering oversight, and it's not the only one, is it, Tim? And the next one's like much more understandable too.
Oh no, yeah, so there's the usual standbys. Bluey is of course second, 963 million. We have things that have always been on this chart, some evergreen stuff, NCIS, Grey's Anatomy, Young Sheldon is still here in 10th, but we have two other shows that we've never seen before. And speaking of Fox/Hulu,
hold on, let me put on my jogging shoes for my victory lap.
What's a genre of show that we always seem to be, we see shows from periodically, say, you know, The Simpsons, or occasionally new shows pop onto the originals chart, like, say, I don't know, when they made Futurama episodes.
I think it's called adult animation.
And they also have hundreds of episodes because they've been airing forever.
Yes, and I think that Hulu recently introduced an entire section called Animayhem, because their data was suggesting that viewing of adult animation had tripled since the start of the pandemic.
Oh, you don't say. So for the very first time, in fourth, here's a show called Family Guy with 428 episodes. And in ninth, here's a show called American Dad with 362 episodes. Family Guy had 837 million minutes viewed during this ratings week. American Dad had 619 million. What the hell?
I knew it!
Please take your victory lap.
On this very format, I have said in the past, the absence of Family Guy was absolutely staggering due to the longevity of the show, the established popularity of the show. We're talking about something that was once canceled and then brought back because the reruns were outperforming new programming on Fox. That is a real thing that happened. The love for Seth MacFarlane products is real. It is identifiable, and it made no sense that this wasn't appearing. And here we have it. This is Nielsen going, whoops, our bad. And I cannot believe we've already referenced this, but how was no one having that conversation at their offices before now?
Another example of this, of course, would be how Hulu decided to reboot Futurama based on their own internal numbers, when in fact Futurama was never showing up on the Nielsen charts. Nielsen has a blind spot. There's something wrong with their system. It is not counting things properly. And to be clear, these American Dad and Family Guy numbers are exclusively Hulu numbers, which goes back to my point about The Resident. Sure, The Resident's got 1.48 billion minutes viewed in the last week, largely because, as we always point out, oh yeah, people just watch anything on Netflix, but Hulu is getting a lot of millions of minutes viewed as well. This is not just a good week on the original and movies charts for Netflix. This is a banner week on the Acquired chart for Hulu.
This is the data that shows why Disney just spent billions of dollars acquiring the last third of Hulu because they had this data and they knew it was being misreported by other people. And Raul, I know you joked the other day about this. They kind of probably wish this hadn't come out yet, don't they?
Yeah, it's been about 6 months now since Disney decided that they were going to buy that last third of Hulu from Comcast. And part of the agreement said that the ultimate number was going to be decided by some investment bankers. Those investment bankers are still calculating. They've got their calculator out. It's apparently a lot of numbers and they've been tapping away. And suddenly Hulu looks a lot more valuable this week than it did last week.
Hulu is the biggest winner in this nonsense by far.
Yeah, and I know we'll mention it, but I want to stress again that Family Guy and American Dad, Hulu exclusive. It's not like these just showed up on Netflix or something like that, and that's why we're seeing them. Whatever they were doing, they weren't getting counted properly by Nielsen. These shows have always been on Hulu, and they've probably been pulling numbers like this the whole time. We just didn't know it officially until now.
And we're not talking about a trivial number of minutes either. We're talking about 1.5 billion minutes between those two shows. Yep, I was going
to say, combined about 1.5 billion, just out of nowhere added to Hulu. So, okay, I kind of take it back. It was a bad week for everybody. Not named Netflix and Hulu. So yeah, that was a highly upsetting week of ratings for multiple reasons.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Sorry about that. In our green lights and cancellations this week, Tina Fey's remake of The Four Seasons has added Steve Carell to the cast.
This really seems perfect given that this is a remake of the Alan Alda movie. Carell is embodying that late career Alan Alda aesthetic of funny, but actually really serious vibe. I'm missing the 40-year-old virgin version of Steve Carell, but that's the path he's charted for himself.
I really like both versions of him.
And watch Dan in real life, everyone. It's a masterpiece.
Yes. Netflix Heartstopper has added Jonathan Bailey and Hayley Atwell for season 3.
I don't even remember what the show is, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to be excited to hear about Hayley Atwell joining some new show.
And lastly, the networks are wrapping up their fall TV schedules. Many shows are getting the axe, but one that survived is NBC's Law & Order Organized Crime, although season 5 of this show will be jumping to Peacock.
How is the show already at season 5?
I don't know.
The interesting thing to me is they're not going to find room for it to air it on the network as well, because we've talked about Disney's strategy. Disney did this with Monsters at Work, where you air the show first on Disney Channel and then you put it on Disney Plus, and that way you can write off the expense to the linear networks division. They're not going to do this with Peacock, which means Peacock's losses are going to grow even more.
As always, we wrap up with what's been keeping us busy over the last week. And I have checked out a few episodes of Bluey, which may sound silly, but it is a very charming show. It's like a warm hug. I can see why parents and children would watch this together. It makes me very nostalgic for my own childhood, but also just is a really lovely illustration of what a wonderful family would look like. I was amused to see that there were some certain folks who were complaining that the dad in Bluey sets too high a standard for fatherhood. Yeah, it's good. It deserves every minute of viewing on streaming that it gets. Raul, how about you?
I just wrapped up Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman on Netflix. This is the series that Guy Ritchie made for Netflix based on the movie he released just last year called The Gentleman, about a British lord who inherits an estate only to discover that it's actually being used as a front for a marijuana growing operation, which, as someone who lives in the U.S. and in a state where marijuana sales have been legal for many years, isn't that quaint. Ultimately, I really wanted to like this show, but it turned out to be much too cavalier in its treatment of violence in the British criminal underworld. There really wasn't much redeeming about it. It amounts to 8 episodes of, look at this stupid situation we've been put in by someone in our organization who's a dumbass. Now, what are we going to do to resolve this situation? And oftentimes the resolution is, well, we're going to have to kill somebody. It was not very pleasant. There were some comedic elements, as anything with Guy Ritchie usually is. The standout element of this entire series was the appearance of Giancarlo Esposito Esposito, as it turns out, a meth kingpin. Oh, shocker there. He plays probably the most gentlemanly of the gentlemen in the series. And I am lobbying at this point for him to maybe get his own spinoff show all on his own, or maybe have him host a documentary series about the etiquette of gentlemanly behavior in the UK, as he spent numerous scenes in this series telling us about, you know, proper penmanship and how you send invitations and how you host a party and what a fine wine might be. This was the best elements of the series, and they all involve Giancarlo Esposito, as oftentimes anything he's in. He is the showpiece in the series, and I liked him very much. Everything else about the series, I cannot recommend.
All right, Tim, how about you?
A couple things. A game I was really looking forward to came out a few weeks ago, Broken Roads. It's isometric RPG homage, you know, the original Fallout style. And I'm a sucker for any of those. And this one had been on my wish list for a long time. I kept checking the updates. I was super excited for it. And it turned out to be incredibly disappointing. The combat was far too easy, which is surprising. Usually sometimes these things make things very difficult, but just a couple levels in, once you actually start fighting things, and that can take actually a long time, you're just overpowering everybody. The appeal of it was supposedly a morality system in terms of conversations and choices, where you had to, you know, basically play as a consistent philosophy. Like, you can't be altruistic in one instance and then in another mission be like, no, screw everybody, I'm gonna kill you all. So that was interesting. And then the writing is good, but it ultimately just doesn't feel like it matters, and the story beats don't make sense, and it's been generally rejected by people who've played it. It's only like 40% positive on Steam, which is a death sentence, but the devs have taken it to heart and have promised improvements and things to work on. So hopefully they come back with it. But considering how long this was in the oven, I was very upset that it wasn't very good. Meanwhile, Balatro has just ended up taking over my life. It is just, you know, completely addictive. It definitely has that one more run to it. Like, this time I can do it. This time I can play this strategy, or hopefully, you know, I'll get the jokers that I'm looking for. So yeah, get that game and you will probably end up regretting it, because it will take over your life too. And of course, Fallout. I'm actually only 4 episodes in, but it's still amazing. And it just makes me want to start playing all the games again, especially the 4th, because that got an update this week for the first time in many years, with, you know, new graphics and new equipment and even a new quest line. So yeah, that will probably be on the list to play this week. And I'm just loving the show. I can't wait to finish it.
And David.
So Xbox Live added MLB The Show 24 this week, and I've been playing it some, and it makes no sense. I like it, but I wish I could figure out how to undo some stuff. I was telling Kim, I was randomly simming a season in franchise. I generally only play franchise mode in these things. And all of a sudden, I lost to Randy Johnson. And so I was like, how did I get Randy Johnson against me? And then I started looking around. I realized other teams had Greg Maddux and Burt Blyleven. And I started wondering what year this was and whether I'd had a stroke and why I smelled toast. And it turns out that that's just one of the features of the game, is they gradually add legendary players throughout the season and in free agency, which means that if you don't sign a bunch of 99s, you can't really win the game. And that's maddening to me, because as Tim will tell you, my baseball team right now doesn't need that much help. We're pretty good. And I would just like to make a few small tweaks and see if I could make them slightly better, but that's impossible unless I literally sign Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth. So I don't know what to think, and I gotta find a way to disable that.
Thank you for listening to Streaming Into the Void. Please consider subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts, and we welcome your feedback. Remember that we're on social media at Streaming Void and online at streamingvoid.com. If you like what you're hearing, please consider becoming a supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/streamingvoid. Be sure to watch for us again next week.